Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. It's our 300th anniversary here in the city of New Orleans. And joining us in this hour is Lamar Gardier, the executive director of the Data Center. And they look at the past, I guess, to best look at the future, to see where we've moved and what is going on, and it's called NOLA 300 Forum, Our Data, Our City, Our Future. Welcome to the show, Lamar.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So tell us a little bit about what your study is, the purpose of it, obviously, and then we'll talk about what it reveals in the data that's been provided.
Sure. So the Prosperity Index is a body of work that we did for the Tricentennial to look at disparities in our community across time, particularly since the 1960s or so to now, to identify if those disparities are holding back our economy. What the research suggests is that developed economies need for everyone within that economy to be contributing at their utmost potential to be competitive. So we wanted to look at New Orleans to see what its potential was for growth in terms of its disparities.
And obviously, and every time I talk to folks that do this, the Katrina event was a complete disruption and an extraordinary event. And we always have to kind of take that, put it in context and take it out of context at the same time, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So disasters like Katrina provide an interesting opportunity to think different, to take different actions, to take a different course, to chart a different course for a city, but they do not change the fundamentals of any particular system there.
Right.
So you're going to see a temporary bump from goodwill and civic engagement and outside money and things like that, but eventually that disaster will exacerbate whatever existing trend was happening before the disaster. So we see it happen, and then we return back to wherever we were before, unless we decide to chart a different path.
Right. Okay, let's talk about the data.
Mm-hmm. Great. So we looked at data from six different sectors to see over the last 40 years or so how New Orleans has been faring. And the specific question that we asked was, have African Americans seen greater levels of economic inclusion since the civil rights era? It's an important question because across the nation, the nation is moving to being majority-minority by about 2050. And so it's going to be increasingly important to make sure that businesses are able to leverage the folks who are available to them, that minorities of all groups are able to be to participate in the workforce to the benefit of businesses. And what we've seen is that New Orleans is faring worse than the nation and worse than other fast-growing metro southern metros in the area. So we have some work to do to close some of those disparities such that our economy can move forward.
Okay, so the six particular areas are?
So we did employment and income, we did housing, democracy, health, education, and criminal justice. The majority of our work at the Data Center and in this report will focus in the employment and income space, the economics piece of this. For us, The Data Center, since about 2010, has been truly focused on prosperity in the region. Mm-hmm. And that prosperity is pretty tightly tied to economic growth, followed by inclusive growth, sustainable growth, and quality of life. And so we take those four things and measure it in terms of determining what our prosperity looks like. So again, economic growth is where we focused here.
So when we're looking at employment and income, what did it reveal that was interesting?
Yeah, so there are a few data points that I think are interesting. When we look at household income, we see significant disparities between black and white households, with white households having average income, or median income rather, of $67,000, almost $68,000 in New Orleans, with African-American households having average household income of only $25,000. That's a significant difference there. So we can imagine what's possible within that gap. You know, what are you able to invest in businesses or in a nice house or just in a certain level of quality of life if you are at one income level versus another? I think another data point
and
that's really—
where were the Hispanic households at in that? Do you know?
Our Hispanic households were at nearly 36,000. There's a much smaller Hispanic population in New Orleans than either white or black households. So the data tends to be a little choppier, if you will, because they're just smaller numbers to compare to.
And are these single-parent households or two-wage income households?
These are households, broadly,
down. It could be both. That's embedded in there.
It's median household income, so it's of all households that are in the city.
Okay.
It has not been broken down by size of household.
Okay. So what we in this trend is saying, if I'm reading this correct, that basically this trend has stayed the same since 1980.
Yeah, so since 1979, we see the gap actually growing since 1980. In 1980, in fact, for New Orleans, white household income was at 52,000 or so, almost 53,000, growing to almost 68,000 by 2016, whereas we see black household income being at almost 30,000 in 1979, falling, you know, inflation-adjusted dollars, of course, to about 25,000 in 2016.
Okay, I misread that. Okay, so it's actually falling. Okay.
Yeah, the gap is growing.
Growing,
yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, my bad. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And what else did we find in the data here that it revealed?
Yeah, so I think an interesting data point, or rather a data point that folks often find interesting, is that New Orleans has made some progress in those post-Katrina days, particularly in terms of small business startups. You know, there's more entrepreneurialism, more people starting businesses. And in particular, we see that the share of black-owned businesses in the city has increased from 21% to 40% over the last 20 years, in fact. But again, the interesting part is that over that 20-year span, the receipts, which means the revenue that those businesses received collectively, has been at 2% the entire time. So when it was 21% share of businesses, those receipts were at 2%. When it moved to 40%, the share of receipts was still at 2%.
So what's your inclination that drives that? Because that's striking.
Yeah, yeah. Well, many of those newly formed businesses are very small businesses, right, with one employee, things like that. What it shows is that those businesses have not been able to grow over time. They have not had access to capital in the same way that some of the white-owned businesses have had access to. Their social networks don't have the same amount of wealth within the network, so you're not as quite able to lean on family and friends for investments to help grow your business, which is really what we see, folks starting businesses but not having the ability to really grow those businesses in significant ways over that 20-year time span.
So, I mean, did we see as many entrants and exits of companies and otherwise failures?
Mm-hmm.
People get it. Was the failure rate disproportionate as well?
We didn't study the churn there. We know that the failure rate for any small business is fairly high.
Yeah.
But we didn't study the churn there. It wasn't part of our research question here.
Okay. All right. Because that would be relevant, would it not be?
Yeah, it could be. I think it still remains the case that we have as receipts that are steady at 2% compared to receipts for white-owned companies, which are at about 33%. So either way, there's a disparity that persists there.
So housing has been a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
That's being talked about: affordable housing, gentrification.
Mm-hmm.
We're landlocked, so we have artificially inflated residential values.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't, you know, we just can't spread, and we're redefining and re-engineering stuff that's already been developed. So what does your data show there?
So home ownership, I think is a good and a bad thing. Not home ownership itself, but the home ownership numbers have shown good and bad.
Yeah, it's good to have it, and then it's bad because you got to go pay for it.
But you do have to pay for it. Everybody's got to pay for it. But what we do show is that those who are homeowners tend to be less cost burdened by the place where they live. Renters tend to be a little more cost burdened here in New Orleans. But the home ownership rate here is a bright spot in terms of disparities. It is the one place where the gap has closed a bit since 1970, with white home ownership being 46% and black home ownership being 27% in 1970, with those numbers moving in 2016 to 54% for white homeowners and 41% for black homeowners. So we did manage to close the racial disparity there, which is, you know, a good thing.
Absolutely. I mean, and that makes for a very diverse city and diversity of ownership. I've always said you have to have skin in the game, right? I mean, if you're going to be a long-term investor here, it's great to have people that come in, but are they going to stay?
Right.
You know, it's the folks that stay that really need to chart the course of where the city's headed, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you go a little bit deeper in these numbers, even though the home ownership rates are good, you do see a difference in terms of the median value of the homes for the white homeowners than black homeowners. It tends to be higher within the white homeowners.
Yeah, that goes right back to the income.
And now as
the banking regulations have gotten even more stringent, it's not as easy to borrow money, quite frankly, to get a home. You know, they used to lend money on stated income. They'll laugh you out of the bank now, right?
Yeah. Right. So you can imagine that that's true, particularly with the income disparities that we described earlier.
Correct. So let's talk about health.
So health, I think, is a really interesting area to describe disparities. Often when folks think about disparities, we tend to think about class and socioeconomics and levels of education and things like that. But health is one of those things where it kind of, in many cases, defies the socioeconomic argument a bit. Here we show the percent of babies born low birth weight by the race of the mother. So typically, the more education that the mother has, the lower the chance of having a baby born with a low birth weight, which does work out to be true for both black and white mothers. But what you see is that even black mothers with a master's degree have a greater chance of having a baby born with a low birth weight than a white mother with a high school degree or less. And we know that there's significant ramifications to being born low birth weight.
So what drives that? What's your inkling of what's driving that?
Right. So the research suggests that this is a response to the body's it's the body's chronic response to stress, right? And that stress is the result of systemic racism born, again, in terms of stress within the black mother and carried on to the fetus.
So when we talk about, you know, this systemic racism issue, how can we test that to, you know, where it manifests itself, where we can draw a conclusion as that's what's driving these lower birth weights? I mean, are we doing this vis-a-vis an interview, or are we doing this just as a general statement of being a stressor in this community and
so, there
so
are,
forth?
There are a number of studies that point to the, first of all, that stress is something on its own that affects outcomes for birth weight and other things. So we've got that. And then many other studies that talk about the stress of living in poverty, the stress of...
Yeah, that was the point I was going to make. It would seem to me the stress of living in poverty would be a greater stressor than others as it relates to the body because, you know, that poverty thing never goes away, whether you're home, whether you're in your car, you know, whether, you know, you're visiting family, it doesn't go away.
That's right. It's always on your mind if you don't have the resources needed to live your life. And what the research again suggests and what the data shows is that poverty rates are in large part driven by race. And so while we can separate race and racial disparities and racism from poverty, they're really pretty well linked. And so separating the two is just not a useful way to understand it.
Right. So when we look over time, are we finding that the health in the African American population is improving?
Yeah. So when you look at the top five causes of mortality for Black and white individuals in New Orleans, you see that across the board, everybody is improving. The rate of death from heart disease is falling, of cancer, of strokes. They're all falling for everyone. And I think that that's absolutely great news that we should all be excited about. But again, going deeper into segregating by race, you see that there's still a significant difference between the rate of death in African Americans from heart disease, cancer, and stroke than you do from white individuals who die of the same things. Rounding out the top five for white people in New Orleans are accidents and Alzheimer's. Again, rounding out the top five for Black individuals in New Orleans, we have accidents and homicide.
Mm-hmm. And as it relates to heart disease and cancer, is that more of a percentage of the population that engages in an addictive disorder as opposed to other things, you know, lifestyle choices?
Yeah, you know, it's when you look at this, it's pretty often controlled for some of those lifestyle choices. And when you look at, you know, how New Orleanians eat or whatever it might be, we tend to do it all about the same. But we do tend to die at from these diseases at different rates, though.
Right. We got to get to a break. We'll continue. We want to hear from you. 260-1870 or text us at 870-870. We're talking to Lamar Gardier. He's executive director of the Data Center. And this is the NOLA 300 Forum, Our Data, Our City, Our Future. We'll be right back after the break. We're back and we're talking to Lamar Gardier, executive director of the Data Center. Now, this study and a lot of this data is the precursor to a forum that you guys are going to have. Tell us about it.
Yes. So every time we do a large publication like this, we provide an opportunity for folks to get together to really come in and talk with us about the data, to help understand the data and be in conversation with other folks who might be interested in it. We are doing the same thing in this case, but around this particular topic, folks will always ask, what can be done? What can we do? And so we've partnered with the New Orleans Business Alliance and the Brookings Institute to talk not only about the data and the racial disparities they might identify, but also what's happening in the city to move forward on this issue to make sure that our economy continues to grow. And then we've got Brookings to make sure that they are bringing the national research and the national perspective so that we know that we are doing things that are really best practices here. So 10 to 3 tomorrow at the Sheraton, 500 Canal Street, is where the forum is going to be. We'd invite everyone to come.
All right. And I think it's free. We're going to continue this conversation. You need to know what's going on in the data to understand where you're going. Folks, the Data Center is holding a forum Wednesday, tomorrow, actually, to discuss findings from the New Orleans Prosperity Index Tricentennial Edition. It traces back to 1718 when New Orleans was established and shows how economics played a role in the culture of the city in reference to disparity and growth. The NOLA 300 Forum, Our Data, Our City, Our Future, will occur tomorrow during the day, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Sheraton New Orleans, 500 Canal Street. Come out. I think it's free. Absolutely. They would love to see folks come out and engage. I got to tell you, it is a very – the one portion of the report that I have, I read it last night. It's very well done. And they also have partners from the New Orleans Business Alliance as well as the Brookings Institute that has provided some sustenance with them as well. And I'm sure that you will find this presentation very interesting. And joining me is Lamar Gardier, the executive director of the Data Center. And Lamar, I think you wanted to make some other points about what y'all were doing with this research.
Sure. So the Data Center itself, you know, we are a relatively small group. And when you're looking at 300 years, well, it takes a lot to look at 300 years. So what we've done is commissioned a set of studies with local scholars to have them go very deep into individual systems. So looking at the health system and or the education system or the real estate sector to understand what the history of that sector has looked like in the hopes of understanding why we are where we are now, right? Understanding why we are here now helps us to understand what to do going forward and what to make sure we don't do going forward. And so the Tricentennial Collection is what it's called. It will ultimately be a series of 9 briefs that explore different topics in New Orleans' history. It's 300-year history. There are 6 available on our website now at datacenterresearch.org. And check them out. It's very interesting where our history has been and where we are now. They each come with a set of recommendations as well for moving forward.
You know, one of the things that I noticed in your work, and I talk a lot about on this show, and just was kind of curious what your thoughts are, the working poor.
Mm-hmm.
And the working poor have a challenge that seems to be a lot more difficult today than it's ever been in any number of respects. And as I look through your report in all of the categories, I couldn't help but going back to the working poor and as why I think a lot of these disparities are revealing themselves in such a harsh way.
Yep.
Is they're not nimble. They don't have a lot of decisions that they can make. In fact, more often than not, decisions are made for them as opposed to them making decisions for themselves because of the situation that they find themselves in. Just wondering what your thoughts were.
Yeah, so I think there are a few different ways to think about that. One is in terms of resilience, to your point about decisions being made for you. When you don't have the income to do different things in life or to prepare for things that might happen, you find yourself less resilient to the shocks and stresses that might exist across your life. So if there's a disaster, your ability to recover from that disaster is depressed if you are part of the working poor group that you described. Whereas if you have more resources, it hurts everybody, right? Everybody suffers when there's a disaster, but your ability to respond and to recover is much greater if your wealth and income is higher. So that's one part of it, resilience. And that resilience is not just in terms of disasters, but it's in terms of the chronic stressors that we face on a day-to-day basis. Another couple of ways to think about it is in terms of the poverty rate, or the other way is in terms of the living wage rate. Really, the living wage is a good way to look at it. It's adjusted for each city, taking into account child care costs, transportation costs, housing costs, food costs, other such things. And it gives you a number that says, based on your family size, this is how much money you need to live a life in that city that is free of public assistance, which is really the goal that I think folks are shooting for in terms of prosperity, having a little money that you can use to help build wealth or buy a house or something like that, start a business, what have you. And so in New Orleans, again, we are looking at that in terms of a living wage. And you can see that 31% of white households are living below a living wage in New Orleans, and 71% of black households are living below a living wage. So either way you slice it, there is a significant number of folks in New Orleans who are struggling in terms of their income, much of that tied to housing costs, transportation costs, and what have you. But again, the racial disparity there is fairly stark.
Right. And the number actually goes up, and it's kind of weird that this works in the reverse, because especially as it relates to the white population, there would be more in that category than 31%, but many of which were able to move and actually increase their living wage numbers by going out and buying cheaper housing or renting cheaper housing further away from the city. If you stay in the city where that has an artificially inflated property values, it gets a lot harder to move above that living wage number in many respects, correct?
Sure. This number, the numbers that I just quoted are for New Orleans, right? Orleans Parish,
right?
If you look at the metro, it's a little bit different. Some of the housing costs are different in the metro. But then remember that many of the jobs available in this region are available in the CBD, right? In the city. And so you have to find your way to those jobs, right? So as soon as we start to think about affordable housing, and that affordable housing being more on the outskirts or farther out from the central city core, then you have to have a conversation about transportation costs, right? Do people have the vehicles that they need to get reliably to a job? Does the public transit system reliably transport people such that they can make it to a job on time? So those conversations are pretty well linked.
And these are all things that have to work in concert with one another to make sure that it works for all of us, quite frankly.
That's right.
Each and every day. We're going to continue to talk about the results of this study and what it actually reveals with Lamar Gardier, Executive Director of the Data Center, and they're holding a forum tomorrow at the Sheraton, 10 to 3. You need to come out and listen to these folks and see what the data reveals and where we're going. We'll be right back after the break. We're back, and we're talking to Lamar Gardier, Executive Director of Data Center, and they will be presenting their report tomorrow at a forum to talk about the disparities amongst the races and otherwise in talking about a number of different social issues. That forum will take place at 500 Canal Street tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Admission is free. They are hooked up with the New Orleans Business Alliance and the Brookings Institute, and I think it's going to be, I hope it's well attended, because I read through this part of the report, and then you informed me that there's a lot more of this data that's out there. So, you know, hopefully some folks will take advantage of joining you guys out there tomorrow. So let's talk about education for a bit. You know, that's kind of the center of the universe of so many things, right? Of being able to move through the up the social ladder, so to speak, and both socioeconomically, day in and day out, and we always have significant disparities as it relates to outcomes on these standardized tests. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. So this is the first time that we can tell that anyone has pulled together ACT scores that go across both public and private schools. And part of the reason that that's available now is because the state mandated in 2013 that all students, all rising, all juniors would take the ACT. And so now we do have a good idea of how folks are performing in the education system at large, whether it's public or private. And what we see is that we do see disparities between black and white students. The average ACT score in 2017 for white students was 25. The average ACT score for black students was 18, and 21 for Hispanic students. Interestingly, when you separate that by private versus public school, what you see is that for the white students in public school, they're scoring 25.2 on average on the ACT. In private school, 25.3. So we see very little difference between what the private school and public school schools are doing for white students. In terms of black students, we see those in public school scoring 17.2 and private school scoring 19.5. So we see a little bit of a difference there, but importantly, still below that 20-point threshold that's often needed to make it into college or to qualify for certain scholarships and things like that. The Hispanic population, though, in New Orleans does seem to benefit from private school education significantly, with their public school students scoring 18.4 on the ACT and private school being 24.3. We didn't do any research on why that might be the case, but perhaps it's that the private schools have more resources available for those Hispanic students.
Well, there's no doubt that I think that there's more resources and there are more advocates in the private schools. I mean, because both of my children went to private school, and I can tell you that there was a lot of talk about helping get somebody to take the ACT or the SAT, whichever one was going to be your choice, about what the writing sample had to be, what was expected. I'm not sure whether or not a lot of those services were provided for in the public school system. Having a clearer understanding and clear delineation of what the expectations are for the purposes of the test would seem to me to be very helpful as well.
Yeah, certainly access to resources makes a difference here. And that's not just access to test preparatory materials like you're describing, but also access to good resources from early childhood on to your 12th grade.
At home.
Yeah. And at home. And
you
at know, home
having
as
access
well,
to a computer, access to
absolutely.
The internet, access to all of those things. In fact, my daughter was doing, presentations on the laptop in first grade.
Yeah, yeah, and certainly parents that have that skill set. There's a digital divide question there.
Which I did not, by the way.
Yeah.
And still don't.
That's okay. I can help you out with that. So
I'm somewhere in those lower numbers somewhere in there when it comes to that aptitude, I can promise you.
That's all right. So, certainly access to resources makes a difference there. Farther in our data, you'll see around education that there are differences in educational attainment as well between the races, which you would imagine factors into a child's ability to score well on their test at all. The ability to go to a parent, ask for advice, or their own experiences are significantly different if your parent has been there versus not.
We got to get to a break. And, the report points out a lot of what's, a lot of outcomes when you look at things from a historical perspective, and they will spend a lot of time talking about the why. The outcome is what it is, and it's an opportunity tomorrow to hear what they have to say, 10 to 3 at the Sheraton Hotel, 500 Canal Street. We'll be right back after the break. We've been talking to Lamar Gardere, Executive Director of the Data Center, and I'll give you the final thoughts, Lamar.
Yeah, so thanks for giving me the opportunity to come on. This is important work that we're doing about our economy and how it moves forward, how we continue to grow the New Orleans and metro economy. And we looked at that in terms of the ability to hire everyone, to make sure everyone is prospering in this city in terms of inclusion. Let's have a conversation about it tomorrow at 10 a.m., 10 to 3 at the Sheraton, 500 Canal Street. It's a free forum, the NOLA 300 forum. See you tomorrow.
All right. That's Lamar Gardere, and we really appreciate you coming in. Y'all did great work, and hopefully you have a great event tomorrow. We'll be right back. The young Marines are in town with the National Sheriffs, and we'll be talking to them when we return. This is Newell on WWE.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.